Hey, welcome to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. We've got a really good show for you today, one that just about everybody in the federal family, active and retired, should be interested in. We're going to be talking about the increase in the long-term care premiums that's coming up in November. And we have two of the world's leading authorities on this program. Paul Fort and Joan Melanson. Joan, you're not to be confused with the L.A. Dodgers player who pronounces his Melanson.
Right? I wish I were.
Okay, big bucks.
Yes.
You guys are with the long-term care partners, and you, as I understand it, administer the long-term care program, which is underwritten by John Hancock, and it's a child, if you will, of the Office of Personnel Management, and the Congress. And it covers, 260-some thousand people?
274,000.
Okay, we put on. And of course, that's only people who are in this program. There are probably, presumably, a lot of federal workers who have long-term care on the outside through somebody else. But anyhow, this is a very big deal. And tell us a little bit about the program and how these premiums are arrived at.
Well, first, Mike, I'd like to thank you for inviting us on the show. We appreciate the chance to talk about an important event, which we're referring to as the enrollee decision period of 2016. And I'm going to be getting into details about that big rate increase that you were referring to. But I just want to refresh listeners out there about a few things. First, as you indicated, the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program was created by an act of Congress and signed into law by President Clinton in 2000. The regulations can be found under Chapter 5, 875, Sections 9001 through 9009, if anyone wants to read them. The program is actually private. It is non-subsidized per statute. That means no public money. It is offered to federal civilian employees, annuitants, uniformed services personnel, qualified relatives, and, as of June 2010, same-sex domestic partners. It's sponsored and regulated by the U.S. Office of Personnel Management, not state departments of insurance. OPM is responsible for issuing the contracts. Each contract runs for 7 years. The most recent contract was awarded on May 1 of this year and will be in effect through April 30th of 2023. John Hancock, Life and Health, was the sole bidder and was awarded the contract. Currently, as I indicated, there are 274,000 enrollees. Now, some points that we want to keep in mind. First of all, since enrollee premiums are the sole source of funding, you have to make sure that the program is sustainable. There's no other money available. The program is fully insured. This means that all liabilities, such as claims, have to be fully funded. The Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program is therefore different from, say, Social Security or Medicare, which are based on a pay-as-you-go basis. And that means that the program has to be able to meet all of its obligations years out into the future. In fact, in many instances, decades out into the future, because people are buying this product when they're younger and they are planning to use it in their last years. So in some instances, there's a 30-year gap between the time of purchase and the time that people actually file a claim. The only other thing I want to mention before I get into the details of the rate increase is the mechanism by which the funding is achieved. This is something we refer to as the Experience Fund. It's a separate account held by the insurer on behalf of the enrollees. All premiums go into this fund. The monies are invested in appropriate vehicles, such as securities.
Which is what all insurance companies do.
Basically, yeah. Yes. All expenses, including claims, are debited from the fund. Only authorized expenses are debited. The fund is regularly audited by OPM's OIG and independent auditors. But I do want to make this distinction between this program and all the others out there. This Experience Fund is separate, entirely separate from all other liabilities that the insurer holds. Expenses are managed, and there's a budget that is established. All expenses have to be approved by the regulator. If there's any gains in the program, those gains stay in that account. They can't be used by John Hancock Life and Health for any other purpose, any other liability or risk that they have assumed. So in that sense, it's different. It's completely separate and walled off. So let's get to that rate increase.
Well, I want to ask you something first. You mentioned in there that the John Hancock, which had the contract before, was the sole bidder. And I think that's really important to mention, because back when I got my long-term care insurance 112 years ago, there were lots of companies that offered it. And the Washington Post, that was my group, and the Washington Post got us a group plan, and it looked very good at the time. A lot of people said I was too young to get it, but I took it, you know, belt and suspenders. Guess what? They stopped offering it.
Yes.
They do not care. They do not do long-term care insurance anymore, meaning those of us who were in the group are grandfathered in. And I recently got a notice, by the way, of a premium increase, which I'm happy to pay. But one of the things people need to do as they slap their heads when they look at these premium increases is to understand, you know, we've got a cost of living adjustment, a COLA. Well, we also have a high cost of living and living longer adjustment that's taken place. And none of the actuaries, I think, back in 10, 20, 30 years ago when they started long-term care, had any idea that this was going to happen, that so many people were going to live longer, and correct me if I'm wrong, and live in pretty dire circumstances in some cases. I think most of us have a friend, a relative, whatnot. I have my mother had Alzheimer's and had long-term care insurance, fortunately, so I'm grateful for that. And I have three friends now that are sort of out of it in a way, but they're in very expensive facilities. So this is the price increases are always awful, but this is a serious business. So go ahead.
Let me just comment on that, and you're right on the money. There were more than 100 insurers offering some form of long-term care insurance in 2000. Today, there's some 15 or 16. It's a very difficult business. I've been involved in it in a long time, and I can tell you some of the best actuaries in the country were drawn to this because it's very challenging. So there was a lot of talent, and a lot of people were looking very hard at this whole line of business. The thing that makes it difficult and the thing that has caused the problems is that there was no actual insured data available. It was a new product. Unlike disability, which has been around for 50 years, life insurance, which has been around since before the Civil War, this is a relatively new product. And because you don't have a lot of people claiming right away, it takes a while for the insurers to get what they call experience. They look at the actual results, but it takes a while for that to accumulate. And that's what we call insured data. Now, there's been public sources of data available for decades. But anybody who's in the insurance business knows that people tend to behave a little differently when they are insured for a risk as opposed to when they are simply covered by a public program. So that's one of the reasons that so many insurers have had difficulties, and actuaries appear to have made mistakes in terms of the assumptions. They look at things like morbidity, pardon the terminology here, morbidity and mortality. Morbidity is the rate at which people will begin to sicken, weaken, become frail, and need help, or perhaps the rate at which they will start to experience cognitive problems. Mortality, of course, is the rate at which they are going to die. If you have a situation where you have some morbidity improvements, people are living a little bit longer, but they're not living in a great state of health, and so they're not dying as well, you can start to get into problems. And what we've experienced here, what Hancock discovered as a result of its deep analysis, they have a very large book of business, over 1 million policies, is that claims were lasting longer. More people were claiming at older ages. They were seeing people claiming at what they call later policy durations. So if someone had a four-year plan, they were living into or a five-year plan, they were living at least that long, maybe longer. So claims were showing up at later points than anybody predicted. I've already mentioned that people have been living longer because of advances in medicine and pharmacy and so forth. The final element, and this has been a very tough one for the entire insurance industry, is the interest rate environment.
Yeah.
We've been in a somewhat anomalous environment now for a number of years. The projected fund returns for bonds are not as good as anyone would have expected 10, 15 years ago. And this has affected pensions. It's affected life insurers. And, of course, in the federal long-term care insurance program, it's affected us. That low interest rate environment means that we have not been able to get the returns that we had hoped. When you don't get returns, you have to take in more premium. So what we are faced with...
Oh, excuse me, Paul. Warren Larson, our producer, is giving us the signal here. We need to take a short break.
Okay.
We'll be right back on federalnewsradio.com. Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. I'm talking with Paul Fort and Joan Melanson. They are from Long-Term Care Partners, and they administer the federal long-term care program, which you've probably heard a little bit about this week. And if you notice a New England accent today, there's a reason for that. Paul, where are you guys located?
We're up in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, at the site of former Pease Air Force Base, now Pease International Tradeport.
Right.
On the Seacoast.
I could tell when you parked your car out front. We were talking about the big increase in long-term care insurance premiums in the government and elsewhere. My group long-term care plan just announced yesterday a rate increase, and we've heard from some federal workers who have left the government and have it elsewhere, and that's happening. Paul, can we get into some of the rate numbers now and the
sure.
You know, the who, what, when, where, and we've done the why.
So let's go to the bad news here. The bad news is that premiums will need to go up on average about $111 per month. That's about $1,300 a year. Now, that's on average. Some people will pay less than that per month. Some people will pay more. The actual range is anywhere from about 1% or 0%, because as Joan will tell you in a minute, there are some people, such as claimants and those people who are purchased at age 80 or older, who will not get any rate increase at all. If you're in that higher end of the span, you could see increases of $150 or $200 per month. The difference depends on several factors. First of all, which program did you plan, did you purchase, whether you were in what we refer to as the Federal Program 1.0 or the Federal Program 2.0, which was introduced with the second contract starting in 2009. The age that you were at when you first purchased, whether you were younger or older, obviously, the older you are when you first sign up, the higher your premium will be. And the third factor was the actual benefits that you selected. How much did you get for a daily benefit? What kind of inflation adjustment mechanism did you choose? What was the benefit period or duration that you selected? Generally, people who are getting the highest increases are people who have the richest benefit plans. Mm-hmm. There are a number of people who have unlimited benefits. That means that their program can just go on. And we have had people who have been on claim for 12 and 13 years. Now, clearly, that's a good thing insofar as people buy insurance to take care of those exceptional situations. But when you have very rich benefit packages, you have very large claims, and those very large claims can affect the rating for the whole group.
Excuse me, when somebody's on for, say, 12 years on one of those unlimited policies, what kind of money are we talking about is being spent in their behalf?
Well, on an unlimited policy, we have among our highest claims 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 $800,000, and some of them are still active, meaning they're still on claim and they're still collecting benefits. Some of these unlimited policies could go to $1 million apiece. So if you look at the premiums that have been paid in against that kind of exposure. Now, I don't mean to suggest that that's every claim. The actual claim payout is closer to about, right now, on average, about $63,000. Because most people don't live that long. But we want to make sure that this program is strong decades into the future. And let me just say that this is not a matter of insolvency or liquidity. The program has all the funds necessary to pay all claims and expenses for the immediate future. The question is, what happens 15 and 20 years down the road? And that's what we're trying to protect against. It's that risk to make sure the program's going to stay strong.
But as you said earlier, in the earlier part of the show, they can't go to Congress and say, we need $500 million.
No, they cannot.
Standalone.
When the Congress authorized this, as the Long-Term Care Security Act of 2000, it was stipulated very clearly that there would be no federal subsidy, no appeals for any relief. So the program has to stand on its own.
And Congress obviously has an interest in this, self-interest, because a number of members of Congress are in this program.
Yes.
Correct?
Now, I don't mean to suggest in any way or appear cavalier about these increases. They are very large. I do want to point out, though, and you can go onto our website and look at it, that the cost of long-term care, as you were alluding to earlier, is staggering. And, you know, the national average for a nursing home is $227, but that includes a lot of areas outside of metropolitan Washington and New York. And
that's $227 a day?
Yes.
Yeah.
And we cite that because that's usually the most expensive form of care. But people who need home health care at $25 or $30 an hour, if they need it for 10 or 12 or 14 hours a day, it's also going to get very expensive.
Well, you mentioned we're talking about the premium increases depend on a variety of things.
Right.
And you talked about the plan 1.0 and 2.0. What's the difference?
Well, 1.0 was the first program that was introduced in 2002. And that's the program that where we had less insured data available to us. We did make some changes in 2.0, which was introduced with the second contract. We had more information on the behavior, if you will, of the federal group. There are some minor differences in terms of the plan design, but both of them have similar options.
Okay. And the other thing, you're talking about the premiums are based on a number of things, including your age at the time you sign up for
right.
it. A 45-year-old is going to get a better rate than a 65-year-old for obvious reasons. The daily benefit. Can you talk about the range in those?
Yes. I'll ask Joan to help me out here. But right now, we are our highest benefit amount that's currently available is how much, Joan?
Well, $450 right now. So, you know, it's a pretty rich benefit. We've been offering also, you know, 5-year plans and unlimited plans. So we do have some folks who have pretty rich policies. And so that's part of you know, what we're talking about here. And I know that a lot of people are, when they hear about this through the news, are going to get sticker shock. And the range is very broad. So the point I would like to make is that it's important for you not to jump to any conclusions right away, but to look at what it means for you. And that's dependent on a number of factors. And all of these packages that started mailing on Monday and will be mailing for 2 weeks will contain your personal coverage that you selected, and some back in 2002, along with some options from which you can choose to mitigate the rate increase if so desired. Now, these packages are in the mail. As they say, the check's in the mail, the packages are in the mail. At the same time, you can go online to our website at www.ltcfeds. And if you go to www.ltcfeds.com/my account, there you can log on to your individual user account, and you can check your coverage and the options that you have right then and there, and in fact, make a selection.
Yes. Yeah, so if there's bad news here, as we mentioned in talking about the rate increase, the good news is that people have these personalized options that have been designed for them in accordance with their own personal history, when they bought, the kind of benefits that they chose. And it'll give them options to avoid the rate increase altogether if they are willing to take a reduction.
You can downsize your plan.
Downsize the plan, and I'll talk about how that works in a moment. There's also an option to take what we refer to as a half landing spot, where instead of paying the full premium, say that average $111, you might pay something like $55, and then you take the reduction, the rest of the reduction, as a benefit reduction, but you're not reducing your benefit plan quite as much. Now, of course, you can pay the whole thing if you choose.
Excuse me. Eric White has taken over the controls here, and he's giving me the break signal that we'll take a short break here on federalnewsradio.com. Welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. Glad to have you with us. We're talking about a really important subject today, and that is the 275,000 current federal workers and retirees who have the long-term care insurance program under the government. And with me today are Paul Fort and Joan Melanson. They are from the Long-Term Care Partners, and they administer the program for the Office of Personnel Management, and it's underwritten by John Hancock. And as we mentioned at the beginning of the show, John Hancock, which has had the program since its inception, was the only firm to bid on it this year. And that's bad, but not maybe for the reasons you think. As Paul said during the show, in the year 2000, there were 100 major insurance companies that offered long-term care insurance. Today, there are 15 or 16, and the one that I am in, the Washington Post Group plan, stopped offering long-term care insurance years ago, grandfathered us in, fortunately, but getting older, people are getting older, they are living longer, and they are living longer sometimes under mental and physical stress, and they need this more and more. So, and as Paul pointed out, this program is self-sustaining. It does not get money from the federal government, so if things go south, they can't go to Congress and say, we need more money, hence this rate increase. It's a big one. Nobody likes it, but here it is. Paul, I interrupted you. What were you saying?
Well, I was just talking a little bit about the fact that everyone will get personalized options, a mailing package. The mailers started yesterday, Monday the 18th, and they will go through July 27th. When they get their options, they will note it. There is something called a premium neutral option. If you don't want to take the rate increase at all, you don't have to take it. You can instead accept a reduction in the benefit package that you have. So, for example, let's suppose you had chosen that automatic compound increase program and you were at 5%. A lot of people are still getting 5% automatic compound increase every year. And the actual rate of inflation for long-term care services is not 5%.
No.
Now, the medical inflation is up there, but not long-term care. Long-term care has actually run closer to 4%. So if over the past 40 years, so if you wanted to accept a reduction from, say, 5% to 4% or 3% or less, you could avoid the rate increase altogether. What that would mean is that you would keep everything that you had already accumulated, but the rate at which your benefits would accumulate going forward would be less.
Your inflation protection would be less.
It would not be rolling up as fast.
Yeah.
It would be less. But it would still not be trivial. If you're already close to 80, you might think to yourself, well, I can weather the risk of inflation. I can accept 2% or 2.5% over the next 5, 7, 10 years before I think I might need to use the program. And that's not the end of the world. You can think of it almost as a little bit of coinsurance. Now, if you had the future purchase option, that's a little different. You might have to accept you might have to move from, say, unlimited to 5 years or 5 years to 3 years, or you might have to make a reduction in your daily benefit amount or some combination of the two of them. But the point I want to underscore is that you don't have to take 100% of this large rate increase. And I also mentioned that 50% business. That's another option for people who agree that maybe they should pay more, but they don't want to pay a lot.
That much more, okay.
And in fact, if you review your package and you find that you might like something a little bit different than is what's in your package, you can call our 800 number at 1-800-LTC-FEDS and talk with someone about the situation and maybe discuss some other options.
Okay, and say I've been in the program 10 years. Mm-hmm. Or when did it start?
2002?
Okay, but I've been in it quite a while. Mm-hmm. I'm that much older. My health probably hasn't gotten any better. Very likely it's gotten mm-hmm. worse. Is that going to affect my eligibility or premiums?
No, absolutely not. That is completely irrelevant. Once you are enrolled in the program, once you've been accepted for coverage, any change to your health cannot be held against you. The only way that rates can change is if they are changed for the entire group or class of which you are a part. So the actuaries look at trends for a broad range of people, not for you in particular. And I should note that, you know, for the future purchase option people, they didn't get any rate increase at all in 2009 with the second contract.
Yeah.
So for those people, they will be getting the first rate increase in 14 years. For those people who took the automatic compound increase, they did get an increase of up to 25% back in 2009. But this will be the second increase for them for future purchase, the first time in 14 years.
Okay, we've got some questions from people here. So here's one from Ann. She doesn't want us to say where she's from. Said, I was offered options to reduce my ACIO from 5 to 4.4% and then to 3% something. I'd like your experts to discuss historical rates of inflation for long-term care, pros and cons of these options. Thanks. I retired from the VA, but I'm working elsewhere. Their long-term care and policy, which I don't have, is also slated for huge premium increases. What about that?
Well, I touched on that just a moment ago, Mike. The historical rate of inflation for the past 40 years has been around 4% on a package of goods and services that we call long-term care, about 4%. Where it's up higher is because of the unusual double-digit inflation of the late 70s. If you take out the late 70s, it actually falls to less than that. But let's say it's 4%. And if you go online, you can take a look at on our website, you can take a look at the cost of care in your area. So you take a look at the cost of care. Let's say you're here, you're in Maryland or you're in Florida. You take a look at the county that you're going to retire in. You take a look at the costs, and then you take into account the rate of inflation, roughly 4% on average. Obviously, that won't be the same everywhere because these are averages.
Okay. Now, here's one from Anthony in Maryfield, Virginia. Will underwriting standards change with the increase in policy premiums?
No. Okay. Underwriting standards have always been maintained, and they will be maintained. We are able to access a few extra sources of data, like data on pharmacy, on people's use of medicines, but the actual the guidelines are unchanged and will not be affected by
right.
this.
Right. And at one point in the program, correct me if I'm wrong, people could join without answering any underwriting questions. I mean, you just said, here I am, I'm a GS.
No.
They've always had underwriting questions.
We have, for actively at work people, you have the chance to fill out what's called, for the first time, you know, mm-hmm. if you join the government, you have 60 days to fill out what's called an abbreviated form. And that abbreviated form asks you seven simple questions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's designed to get at whether you have a very serious condition or you're actually at the point of needing care. If you miss that 60-day window, mm-hmm. you have to fill out the long form. If you are a spouse, you fill out the long form. So, but we have never had a time where simply by virtue of your status as a federal employee, whether federal, civilian, or uniformed services, that you would just get the coverage. That has never been the case.
So nothing changes because of this open enrollment period.
Well, I wouldn't refer to it necessarily as an open enrollment because when we think about it, I think of open enrollment usually means that you're going to give people a little bit of a break on the medical evidence that you require. We like to refer to this as a special decision period. This is something that is being presented to the 264,000 enrollees who are being affected as a way of mitigating the rate increase.
Well, premium increase notwithstanding, if I'm not a member of the program and I want to join it, can I do that now?
Yes, you can apply as everyone else can apply.
I mean, looking at these numbers, these are frightening.
Well, I would invite you to look around at the market. Insurers have raised rates to long-term care insurance all over the country. Many of them have been high double-digit rate increases. I think you will find that both with respect to new applicants who want to enter the federal long-term care insurance program, it's very competitive with what's out there, even after the rate increase. And for those people who actually are already enrolled, they may be wondering, have I still got a good deal or is my deal as good as my neighbor's? And the answer I think they will find is yes.
Yeah, okay.
Even after the rate increase.
Here's a long one from T.S. in Gaithersburg, Maryland. Was any thought given to gradually increasing the premiums instead of raising them all at once to ease the burden? Also, since lots of people are looking to opt for a lower daily payment, reduce the number of years your LTC policy covers, or make changes in inflation-adjusted options, and I know you answered that, LTC partners would have been getting much more in payment than they would have had people known this and had those lower policies for 14 years and not been paying in the higher amount, the higher premium. Therefore, since this was the case, it seems LTC partners would have been using the extra money for all those years and reaped all the benefits, since now they'll be paying out less benefits. Has anyone gone back and seen how that plays out in the monetary equation, OPM? And he says, but finishing comment, by the time many of us get to using this benefit, there won't be any benefit to get, and we will pay it at an enormous amount of money.
All right. Wow. Well, there was a lot of editorial comment there as well as a question. How I will answer that is quite simply this way. First of all, we discussed at length the idea of phasing in the rate increase. That was a logical and a common sense thing to do. And in fact, a number of insurers have tried to do that around the country, working with state departments of insurance. The problem there is that you're not getting the money you need as soon as you need it. And because you're not getting the money, that means that the actual cost of the rate increase is more. If you stagger it over 3 or 4 years, it means that now interest is building. With each month or each year that you let it go and you don't collect that premium, you can't invest it. So we looked at it and we thought, no, the better thing to do would be to get all of the premium upfront or to give people some kind of reduction. Now, there may be an implication in the second half of that question that Hancock is going to somehow make money on.
Yeah.
That's not the case. Hancock, in fact, has already agreed as part of this contract to reduce its risk charge, which was never high, as well as its asset management fee. And there'll be a further adjustment when we learn what the premium is. But I wish to note that Hancock's profits are capped. And so that was the whole business of the experience fund we were talking about a little while ago.
Right, and
again, that's why it's different. Hancock cannot make out on this.
Right, and the money is needed because it's a self-financing program.
That's it.
Okay, need to take a short break here. Be right back on federalnewsradio.com. Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. I'm talking with the folks from Long Term Care Partners. They administer the government's long term care insurance program, which is underwritten by John Hancock and overseen by the Office of Personnel Management and LTC. Guys, you wanted to talk a little bit about, I can't get this term out, safe landing spots? Love
landing
it.
Spots.
Okay. What's that?
Well, we have been talking about these landing spots. These are another way to think of them is personalized options that you can learn about either by opening up your package when it arrives, or by going online and registering for an account, a personal account if you don't have one, under My Accounts on ltcfeds.com, and you can go in and you can take a look at everything that we're sending you by mail there. But the landing spot is simply your personalized option. The term came up because it suggests that if you don't want to pay the premium, you have a place to land. You're going to get a premium neutral landing spot mm-hmm. by reducing your benefit package.
Yeah, okay. Very good. I think surveys have shown that the three most feared words by the American male are some assembly required. And you guys are talking about this is going to be you can do this yourself.
Yes.
You can do this.
Yeah.
How is that going to work?
Well,
and what are the magic dates, too?
Yes, that's a very good question. You get this big package in the mail, or as Paul just said, you go onto the website and you see these various landing spots, these various options. How do you make the right decision? And that's a very important question that we're going to be getting. And because of that, and it's a very important decision, we are providing a number of resources that will help you make the decision. And by the way, you don't have to make the decision tomorrow. You do have until the end of September, the 30th of September, to make the decision. So we are giving you time to do the research. First of all, on the website, you will see very comprehensive questions and answers about the new contract and your options. You will also have various tools. Paul talked earlier about the cost of care. You look at the coverage you have currently and see if you might possibly want to reduce it because of the cost of care in your area. You may want to co-insure, pay part of it yourself. There also is a self-funding tool you might want to look at. There are various tools online to make some decisions. Also, we are providing within the user accounts, and Paul mentioned you can create a user account. You might have done that when you applied for the program, and of course, trying to remember your password is quite a thing to do. So you can always reset your password. You can go in, and for the package that you're offered, you'll see a video that will mm-hmm. help you make a decision. 10-minute video. You'll see a more comprehensive webinar that would be about 25 minutes in length, where it gets really into the details of what are the factors to consider if you were to take one of these reductions. Landing spots, one of these reductions. Again, you will be reducing your coverage if you go for premium neutral, or if you go for one of those 50% options. You will be reducing your coverage, but you may be able to, depending upon the situation in your life, where you plan to retire, what your age is at this time, what you originally bought, and your family factors, as well as affordability. That's always an issue for some people on a fixed income, and we understand that. But these are important things. Now, if you need some help, because we find that a lot of people will go online, the read up and everything, and they want to talk to a person. They want to get somebody to weigh in on what they're doing. Our 800 number, 1-800-LTC-FEDS, is staffed with well-trained professional customer service reps who can assist you. We have over 300 of them starting on Monday that have been trained, and they will assist you in this decision because, again, we know it's a very important one. Now, you may make a decision and decide, I don't think I made the right decision. I've talked to people. I've done a little bit more research. You can change your mind as many times as you want. The last time you make that decision is the one that supersedes all the other options that you sent in, either through a form or the decisions you made, the selections you made online, because you can easily do it online as well. And you have until September 30th to keep changing your mind. And at that point, the enrolling decision period is over, and the premium will be effective November 1st. So those are the important things to remember, the 30th of September and the 1st of November. And we are hoping that all the tools that we're giving you, whether you call us or go online, will help you make an informed decision. And that's what we're there, to help you make the decision that's right for you. And only you can make the decision. We can offer considerations, guidelines, things to think about, but the decision is really up to you.
Now, despite the fact that premiums are going up for many, if not most people, if I want to upgrade for some reason, can I do that?
You can always upgrade your coverage. You will, however, have to fill out underwriting questions for any increase in your coverage. You can decrease at any time, and that's fine, but any increase to the coverage requires underwriting questions.
Well, you know, an event like this, it seems to me, is a good time to kind of take stock and look around and think, where was I 10 years ago? Mm-hmm. How many people, if any, did I know who were in a nursing home or getting assistance at home? How many people do I know now? And it might be unnerving to realize how many. 10 years ago, I knew one person. Mm-hmm. Now I've known five, including two that were very, very long-term care. At least one under the same plan I'm under.
You know, you're right, Mike. It's like you do your will and you check it off, and then you realize that when your kids were young, and now your kids are off on their own, and you say, I haven't looked at my will in all that time. Circumstances change. Your income changes. Health conditions within families change. Where you decide you want to retire might change.
Well, and you were saying earlier, Joan, that you know you have to look at family factors.
Absolutely.
Well, do you have children, for example, or family members, younger family members living close to you, people who could stop over, or have they moved
out
of state because they're pursuing a career? That's a factor that could determine whether you're able to get home health care or you have to consider assisted living or even a nursing home if you're that frail. It might interest people to learn that assisted living is the hot thing. And
all right, listen, thank you both very much for being here. Remember, this show is archived, so you can listen anytime. We'll be doing a lot more on the long-term care premiums. See you in a week.